Today I have Mark Morris with me from LegalClosing.ca. Hi, Mark. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, good. And I'm really happy today. We're talking about a really interesting topic for me because I've been following it since May. And it's basically the iPro crisis, the scandal that deals with RICO and real estate. And I'm going to kind of jump right in, Mark. So, you know, this investigation started in May. The co-founders of iPro Realty Brokerage illegally dispersed $10.5 million, I know that number bounced around a little, from its consumer deposit and commission trust accounts. And then RICO waited a bunch of time. So this kind of, you know, I think when we heard about it, and then they started to tell the public and its own industry about what went down. And then, you know, subsequent to that, RICO went out and cut a deal to make sure there's no fines or charges against the two individuals, the two gentlemen that owned iPro. And then the company popped up again. From what I can understand, that's what I was trying to get to the bottom of today, is did they just open up another shingle after this went down, or did it go down and then someone open it up after? And that's where I need your help today.
Yeah, totally. Well, that was information of what's gone on. So just because I know some of your listeners aren't real estate based, in Ontario, in actually most of Canada, for most of the professions, we have self-regulation. And self-regulation means that the province itself, the minister, isn't actually sitting and watching what happens. Instead, the minister reports to or appoints an organization. In brokerage sense, it's called RICO, the Real Estate Council of Ontario. And RICO is there to regulate and govern and ensure that realtors and brokers and brokerages live up to that most sacred trust, that being the permission granted by the province to collect people's monies and hold them and ensure that they are safe. And that is the very thing that iPro did not do in this case. And the very thing that you correctly pointed out, the regulator failed to regulate. And it's a bit early to say that definitively, but its signs and preliminary signs are seemingly indicating that not only did RICO abjectly fail in its regulatory requirements and tasks, but they may very well, to the point that you were just bringing up, have actually, whether knowingly or unknowingly, facilitated and abetted the people who perpetrated the fraud by allowing them to maintain their asset base. And we can talk about that for sure.
Right. Wow. So, you know, any idea? So they dispersed this money. They took, it was sitting in a trust account. They took it. They used it, I guess, personal needs. They used it for company costs, expenses, I guess, to keep moving forward. Is that kind of the inkling that's coming out?
We don't know if it is for that purpose or whether it was to help one of the principals own 6 properties in Ontario or whether it was just raw fraud. I mean, we have no knowledge of what's going on nor what that money was used for. Forensic auditors will be involved and they will produce a report undoubtedly to Dentons, who is the auditor that RICO has now appointed and that the province has seen fit to monitor. We'll find all this out, but right now it's too early to say what was done with the money. What is very clear is that the money was removed, and it doesn't matter what it was used for. The sacred trust has been therefore violated with Ontarians. So I mean, between you and I don't really give a crap what it was used for. It's totally irrelevant. Trust funds are sacred. They were touched. Plain and simple. No excuse.
Yeah, good point. No, I agree. I'm sort of curious, you know, being a former CPA, I'm constantly intrigued how come it takes so long to find this out, right? The forensic guys that I worked with years ago when I was practicing were super good, very meticulous and fast, right? They would come in quickly, move through your books. They could tell you within a couple of days where the money went, how. So I'm always curious because this is going to take, from what I was reading today, this whole kind of audit is going to take place to the end of this month and report coming out in October, Mark. Is that what they're thinking timeline?
But let's remember, first of all, that iPro is huge. And when I say huge, just for context, 2,400 agents practicing means that the amount of money that is flowing in and out is an exceptionally large amount. And the forensic auditors are going to want to have individual accounting on files that are entirely messed up if the fraud was meticulously maintained over the course of months. I ran one of the largest law firms in Ontario for many years, and we had to do daily reconciliations, and we had, and with all of the resources that we brought to bear, controllers, accountants, you name it, every single day on top of our files, it was still a jumbled mess, even though we were adhering to the law and all of our reporting requirements. We never had an issue. But my God, if you were trying to mess with the books, untangling that, particularly in the context of tens of thousands of transactions, it's not unreasonable to expect a month and a half of Denton's work to ultimately go through it, given size. The real right. question you are asking, which I think is more pertinent, is how did this happen in the first place? Why was it the case that RICO failed in its audit standards so badly? And there's two separate reasons for that. First is the immediacy of the event. Honestly, if they truly did, turns out that we'll find out from the Denton's audit, but if we find out that they truly did know about the fraud in May, if they permitted the owners of iPro to go ahead and maintain ownership of the trust accounts and ownership and direction of brokerage while they knew there was a fraud for 3 months, that there is a problem in and of itself, just in terms of the way the regulatory clampdown took place. But there's a further problem insofar as there is a vast difference between auditing a small firm and a large firm by virtue of the fact that small firms usually fall within the panoply of the insurance that RICO itself mandates be extended. So the insurance coverage in this instance is a total of $8 million, $4 million for consumer deposits and $4 million for commissions. Okay, if you're a small firm and you're engaging in fraud, there's a high likelihood that the insurance premiums will cover whatever the fraud is. Thus, the general public won't be affected. But if you're a large firm, that's not the case. And what's more, because there is systemic risk to the system that we're now seeing in the iPro event with large firms that go down, and they're not the first large firm to go down. I was the lawyer of record for Redpin, which didn't go down because of fraud, but went down because of bankruptcy in 2015. You know, and at that point, many people lost their shirt over and above the insurance premiums. And perhaps it's time for the regulator to ask, should there be separate audit tracks for large systemic risk firms versus smaller firms? And is there, obviously there is, a need for more immediacy upon the discovery of fraud, such that you aren't sitting around for 3 months and allowing the very people who may have perpetrated the fraud, who are alleged to perpetrate the fraud, to try to preserve their assets and save face?
Right. So, Mark, just so I understand, because I think I got that. So the insurance coverage for large and small is the same.
Yes.
Right. So in this case, iPro is a big company, or was a big company. And so it would be covered up to $8
million. $4 million and $4 million. $4 million for consumer deposits, $4 million for commission. Now, if I may just give an editorial for a second, because I don't want people freaking out. Commission, yeah. Above $4 million, people are going to, the realtors are going to unfortunately face a pay cut. Consumer deposits, if there are deposits in excess of the $4 million that are missing, that is to say, let's say they embezzled $5 million, $4 million is covered by insurance, $1 million is a discrepancy. There is no way in my mind that RICO can do anything except cover it out of their own funds, because the sacred trust will be broken with consumers forever. You either believe that your dollars are safe when you put them in a brokerage trust account, or you do not. And to RICO's credit, because RICO has had a bit of a change of heart and has been acting a bit differently last week once the disinfectant of sunshine was brought to bear, RICO has said, look, iPro, you are to continue to dispense any money from trust that is consumer deposit related so that we do not stop any closing from taking place and so that there is no breach of agreements. And so it's seemingly the case that RICO is going to step up and protect consumer deposits, because what choice do they have? If they don't do that, then fundamentally brokerages themselves that have chosen to self-regulate and have been given the privilege of self-regulation have failed in that fundamental task. And as a result, every dollar that a consumer has to eat is directly affecting the credibility of realtors writ large. So I do not believe that realtors will actually allow, or RICO will allow itself, to see a single penny of consumer deposits lost. That is the way they're conducting themselves right now. In terms of commissions, that's going to be a different story entirely.
Okay. So, and RICO, sorry, and just, you know, good knowledge base for me, and, you know, my wife does real estate. So trying to understand a little bit of more of it. So RICO gets its funds from fees charged to realtors.
Correct.
Right. And I assume they have their own insurance.
Well, no, they don't. They have an insurance provider called Claims Pro. They don't self-insure. Okay. They use an insurer called Claims Pro.
Okay. So they would backstop the loss, I guess, whatever funds they have that they haven't used. And then they would backstop to make sure consumers aren't out, whatever money's the delta, let's call it, right?
Whatever delta is.
Okay.
That is my conjecture. That isn't something that right. is, but honestly, it's a conjecture predicated upon some pretty obvious conclusions that you need to draw from where we are.
Okay. And if they made a statement, like if they said anything to that effect, or they've been pretty quiet?
They haven't said, they have said that every single transaction that is concluding, not the commissions, but consumer deposits, need to be paid out as they are demanded, and that iPro will continue to do so. What that leads you to believe is that they're clearly not doing a pro rata analysis. And as I very much doubt that they're going to leave one poor sucker at the end who had the transaction at the very end with $0, it's highly likely, given their actions, that they intend to make consumers whole, which is their charge, which is their mandate, and frankly is what I would expect from a regulator that takes itself seriously.
Right. Okay. And then realtors, I guess realtors are the ones who probably, if again, it's a, there's a delta, they're going to have to figure that out.
Not if. You see, there will be a delta for commissions, but that's not the big story. That's not the big story. The big story is the one everyone's missing. Ontario, for I know you have a national audience. Ontario has, like Vancouver, experienced a massive real estate boom, particularly in new construction, that lent itself until about 2022, 2023, roughly. And new build construction means condos in Ontario, in Toronto, and condos have a five-year development cycle. This is important because you have to understand the way realtors are actually paid on commissions. They're paid 4% of the purchase price, 2% upfront normally, 2% upfront, 2% on closing. The problem, the undisclosed problem, where the vast majority of the hit is going to be taking place, is when builders refuse to pay the additional 2% on closing because they have a contract with a defunct entity called iPro. It's when that 2% commission comes due, which is possibly I'm not trying to exaggerate this, but tens of millions of dollars that is due and owing, because we had 2,400 practicing agents in the height of market in Ontario, in the core of where Real Estate Central took place. And we have all of these condos closing. The likelihood of builders who are very much hurting right now because of where they are in the real estate cycle and looking for any cost savings possible to deny the 2%. Because they know that iPro either won't enforce or is not a viable entity, depending on what happens to it, is very real. And that's where, and that's not covered by insurance, and it's not identified yet because so many people haven't yet hit that stage and they don't realize they're not being paid. But that's where the true pain point will come for realtors from this scandal.
Oh, wow. I never even thought of that. You know, you hear the condo, you know, conundrum all the time, especially in Ontario with the number of vacant condos and things going on and renting condos. Wow. Just another blow to the condo world. Actually,
it's not a blow to the condo world. It's going to actually support the builders' bottom lines. But
yeah,
it come at individual expense, and all the people who worked and put their lives and sweat and tears and everything else into this are being let down because of the fraud.
Yeah, no, I get it. So what happens to iPro? Like what happens to, so, you know, I hear it opened up. So under iCloud Realty, is that the 17 offices reconfigured?
This, to my mind, is the real scandal. So let's first understand, I know people don't like to speak law, but you'll permit me because for some crazy reason, 25 years ago, I decided to apply to law school and now I speak this language. So the be all and end all is that there are two different ways of acquiring a property. The first is acquiring the shares. So the owners own shares in a company. They sell the shares. That company continues to exist. And you can put a new brand name or anything else, but the shares fundamentally pertain to the same company. So all the assets and liabilities continue with that. The other way you can sell a business is through what's called an asset sale, where someone goes ahead and incorporates a brand new company and agrees to purchase out the underlying assets of the brokerage. Mm-hmm. Underlying assets of the brokerage, to be critical and clear, are the locations, to be sure. But the fundamental value of the brokerage, and this is where the real scandal comes, the real scandal in my eyes, the fundamental value of a real estate brokerage is the agents. Now, let's talk about the way businesses are valued anywhere in the world. You take the net operating income, which is your expenses after tax, your profit after tax before tax, but after your expenses. Take your net operating income and you divide that by what is effectively a discount rate. So as an example, if you make $100,000 a year and the discount rate for brokerage businesses is 5%, you do 100,000 over 5%. That gives you the present value, what someone should make for the business. Hope that makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyone who engages in the fraud fundamentally can expect their assets, because the brokerage assets are not hard assets, they're people, to leave. And what happened here was that the two owners of this business were permitted to conduct an asset sale, selling out their brokerage locations to a new company owned by someone else. And they were then allowed to tell all of their primary assets, being the realtors themselves, that they were semi-retiring and they were just transferring this over to another entity. Now, here's where the scandal gets bad. That's fine. They were trying to do what they were trying to do. They're fraudsters. They're trying to preserve their asset values as they're on a sinking ship. Sure. But where the scandal gets bad is that RICO, the Real Estate Council of Ontario, facilitated it. RICO, this is where it starts to stink to high heaven, separate and apart from the fact that they sat on the board. RICO arranged to mass transfer all of the underlying value of the brokerage, which was owned by the fraudsters, to a brand new brokerage, thus preserving the assets, a task it has no mandate to perform. It is up to other realtors, upon discovering this fraud, to make a decision as to where they are going to go. Instead, they were given 3 days' notice and told that if they did not positively go to a different brokerage, they would be mass transferred to this new place called iCloud, which, by the way, has its own problems with Apple now, I'm sure, because who names their brokerage iCloud? I don't know. Anyways, we're going to put that aside entirely right now. You can tell how much work they did because they were in such a race to just kind of get something going. Now, here's the further scandal is that on any objective metrics, the very people who worked within iPro are now running iCloud. They're not disassociated in any manner or respect. They are some of the same principles. They aren't the people who conducted the fraud, to be sure, but they're the sister of, they're the cousin of, they're the previous broker of record of. Who the heck knows? But they're not new. So not only were they given time by the regulator to go ahead and establish a new company, not only did the regulator then facilitate the transfer of the underlying assets to this new entity, which they knew or should have suspected was affiliated, but they then, to boot, let these people with who were sitting on their board until 2023 off with the slap of the wrist so that they could claim to their entire staff that they had semi-retired and everyone was to fet their monumental achievements over the course of 20 years of building up a brokerage with 2,400 people. It beguiles belief. And to the realtors' credit, I'm talking about the realtors of Ontario, realtors were revolted by this because not only did it smell, but everyone understood that people were making off with $8 to $10 million of money at the expense of every single person who has worked to engender trust with the public. And RICO, the people we pay to regulate and ensure this doesn't happen, they were going ahead and facilitating this, or at least facilitating it on its face. And by the way, if you're wondering why the minister himself stepped in on Friday and said, not only is Denton's going to be doing this review, but we sure, am I allowed to swear on your show? We sure as shit are going to be regulating this to high hell, and we're going to be making sure this is clean. It's because it smells as bad as it sounds.
Okay. I didn't know that. Thank you. So what happens to iPro? Is it fold? Is it a bankrupt company now? Or is it a,
oh, God.
Has it been sold to your point about asset shares and share sales? Was it a transaction?
Oh God. I hope it hasn't been sold. No, it's been taken over by the regulator. I hope it has not closed. If the regulator has any sense whatsoever, there is no way in hell they will close iPro. Now, that doesn't mean that they have sense, by the way. I mean, look at how the way they've conducted themselves to date. But if they were asking me for legal advice, the first thing I would say is, to hell you are closing this down. You are keeping this active. Why? Remember what I talked to you about all those contracts that have been signed with iPro and those new builds? Well, to keep those contracts active and to be able to claim commissions, you need to keep the entity alive. Otherwise, there is no contract. So I sure as heck hope and I suspect that iPro as an entity will remain open, but its authorities and the signing authorities and the actions will be governed by people who are directly appointed by RICO, such that the old ownership has no say in how it conducts its affairs going forward.
Okay. So do we, iCloud, help me out a little bit. Do we know who owns iCloud?
We do.
And who owns iCloud now?
It's as I discussed. I don't feel comfortable saying it because I wasn't affiliated before iCloud. But I'll tell you, there's two different entities that have been established that are where it's acceptable. There's something called Sky something or another on iCloud. And both of them are owned by affiliates. Like, that's all I'm comfortable saying. They are people who work for the principals or are related to the principals or something. They are not independent third parties.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. That's what I was trying to figure out when you said it. So they have a previous affiliation or current affiliation with iPro.
Correct. And my guess is that there's whole trusts, shares being held in trust for the fraudsters, or there's some sort of a relationship. This is all conjecture. All conjecture. I want to be very clear. I have no proof of anything. But it's not hard to understand what's going on. You can just see it. You can smell it. This is where, if I was conducting an audit, this is where I'd be zooming in.
Right. No, very interesting. Crepes. It unravels because you don't read much. You know, this is new kind of because we're understanding the background. And I think for people like myself who aren't in the industry, it's very interesting. So they talked about the ombudsman. So let's talk about that for a minute. So now, this thing unrolls. They're talking about maybe RICO having a more closer relationship or an oversight under the Ombudsman of Ontario.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that? And I have my own thoughts on that, but I'd like to get what yours are and understand what you're thinking.
This could have happened under an ombudsman. This could have happened under... So you have a more conservative show. Okay, so I'm gonna quote a conservative thinker. I was privileged to go through university, and I had Jordan Peterson as a professor, who taught me in a class of 12 people around in a circle. It was before he was famous, and before he went into a whole bunch of political dialogues and diatribes. He was quite brilliant in his own field, where he taught a course called Maps of Meaning. And the purpose of, I'm sorry if I'm wandering here, but it's actually very interesting. No. His work on Maps of Meaning came down to something quite seminal. He said, look, let's examine all of the world's religions, all the world's cultures. He's like, what is interesting about them is that they have passed stories on from generation to generation, even before the advent of writing, and those stories remained. I believe, speaking for Jordan, I believe that there is something fundamentally true about stories that are passed on from generation to generation to generation. There has to be an essence of humanity in those stories that makes sense to people, else they would stop telling the story. So we started examining all of the biblical stories and Vishnu and Krishna and the yin and the yang and the stories of Disney and Pinocchio. And you should listen to the Maps of Meaning. They're available on podcasts. It's actually fantastic. And Christianity and Judaism and Islam and God knows what, but they all have the same story, which is the fall from grace into the redemption. Now, that's a Christian motif, but it's the same story over and over again, that you have to fall before ultimately you redeem yourself. And that is a truism of humanity. It's a truism of life. Rico has fallen. Sunshine has been brought to bear. We have a real hardship that is ahead of us. And yet, it is through that fall that we get grace. It is through the fall that ultimately we can, you know, have knowledge, Adam and Eve and Christ in the resurrection. That story of humanity is being replicated right now in the story of Rico. If you're asking what caused this, it's that Rico, frankly, was clearly rotten. I mean, in my view, this is an editorial again, but it was rotten. I mean, for a registrar to swipe a deal where $10 million is taken and all you get is the ability to claim that you've semi-retired with a birthday cake message and then preserve your assets as it goes over to another company and then give everyone a celebratory hug, you know, and avoid provincial prosecution to boot, like all of it stunk. All of it was a low ebb. And yet the story of redemption and cycles is such that we probably will have much stronger enforcement because people were so disappointed because sunlight was brought to bear. And that's the fundamental human story. And whether we have a regulator or we don't, that rot was there and needed to be outed. That rot has now been outed to some degree. I'm hopeful that we'll see the story of humanity replicate itself with Rico and ultimately for us to have a stronger regulatory body. That will last until the next scandal, but you know, at least we'll get our next 20 years or 30 years in. And hopefully people have learned from this experience such that we regulate properly and understand the privilege that the province has given to us to ultimately protect Ontario's cherished monies. You can't conduct fraud. Canada's notoriously bad at prosecuting fraud, but it's very helpful when people get to see the behind the curtains and see just how bad they are at doing it. And frankly, that's probably our only chance at a change. But certainly change is coming in this instance. And yes, it may be in the form of an ombudsman or maybe in the form of a regulator that has increased powers and that comes down on things like a ton of bricks. And it may be in the form of our fees being doubled as realtors, such that ultimately we get new auditors in and new auditor paths and everything else. Something will change. But whatever it is, at its heart, you need to have people who are serious about their mandate.
I agree. Mark, you know, it's just as I'm listening to you and going on, I'm thinking to myself, this thing is going to go on. We're going to be hearing about this probably for years as people litigate this, try to get their money, you know, developers, real estate agents. So this is probably, if you had to guess, how long do you think we hear about the iPro issue?
I think this will be out of the news very shortly now that the province is involved, and it will rear its head again in a month or two's time when the report comes out. I think so long as consumers are made whole, this will become something of the industry discussion more than it is the public discussion. It's been getting front page news of the Toronto Star and the Globe and Mail and the National Post for some time. That will kind of go away. But I think the scare that has been put into our regulatory bodies and realtors as a whole is something that will not dissipate. I do think that the lawsuits will continue for a long time, but those will be under the curtain. People will lose their interest. I do, however, think that there was enough sunlight and disinfectant that was brought to bear that whatever the outcome, fundamental change is afoot, and Rico will be proceeding in a very different way in terms of its enforcement mechanisms going forward. Now let's try to bring that same gusto to the Law Society. professional engineers, the architects, and everyone else, because there's a whole bunch of other self-regulatory bodies as well that, let's be very clear, could do a better job. There is a lawyer presently right now with $3 million in missing trust funds in Brampton. Cartel and Bowie just walked away with it. You know, like, to hell with this. If you take a penny of consumers' funds, then go to jail. This is not something that we either are going to be serious about this or not. And if we're not, let me know, because I'm sitting here with a trust account with $15 million on a daily basis. And Tahiti seems really nice. Like, honestly, I would very much like to work on my tan. So tell me if we're being serious about this or not. And there's a whole bunch of professionals who, I'm saying this as a joke, obviously I'm not going to ever do anything with trust funds, but there are people who are on the cusp. And regulatory enforcement keeps them in line. And we have an obligation as Canadians to treat this more seriously and to understand that regulation means regulation and prosecution where ultimately it is warranted.
Yeah, well said, Mark. I agree. And, you know, I want to ask you a favor before we go. I just, when the report comes out, I'd love to have you back on the show because I want to dissect that report, you know, your background, my background in finance. I'd love to sit down and just go through it and see what the outcome is. This is so, you know, when I started following this, I was so curious to where this ended up. It's always, to me, it's the final report when it comes out, you know, to read the where people land and how they saw it. So I'd really appreciate if you have time when we get the final report and we jump back on. And I want to thank you. I know we did this, you know, Mark was gracious enough today to jump on this podcast because this is something that we had on our list. We've been wanting to do for a few weeks. So I really appreciate it. Mark Morris, principal from legalclosing.ca. Thanks for your time and look forward to talking to you again soon.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you for being on top of this. It matters.